And welcome to this week's edition of An Organic Conversation, a show about food, ecology, stories from the land, recipes, nature, sustainability, interconnectedness, relationships, and life itself. We're your hosts, Helge Hellberg,
Mark Mulcahy,
and Sita Rani Palamar.
Today's topic is extending the harvest into the holidays and winter months and beyond. The beautiful craft of jamming. In this hour, we will learn everything about jamming, what to do and what not to do, about sugar substitutes and which flavors go together well, and why making jam is by some considered anarchy in the jar. Jam, putting summer on your toes today on An Organic Conversation.
You know, I love receiving homemade jam. I love the whole idea of eating these preserves that someone has put some love into a jar along with just really fresh taste of the season. And I go in jam spurts, right? It's like, okay, I get peach jam and then it's on my toast for 3 weeks and then I don't touch it again. And then I have another one where it's blackberry or something like that. And I just can't wait to learn actually some of these tips on maybe how to start making it myself.
Yeah. And, jam on your toast for 3 weeks. We got to have a conversation.
With almond butter.
You've got to eat it at one point.
You can get more creative. But one of the things I love so much about jam is the versatility of it, right? It's not just sweet. It's also savory. There are so many things that you can do with jam, not to mention so many things that you can use to make jam. And for me, and I think for other people I've talked to too, some of the things that kind of deter them from making jam are fear of botulism and also not knowing what they're going to do with it other than put it on their toast. And so those are two really easy things for us to uncover in this hour with our terrific guest. And I look forward to learning.
And I know Helga was talking about that famous jam tofu recipe this morning when we were sitting around the table.
I hope you like jamming too. Actually, if I look back at my childhood, I can. I don't know which year was what, but I remember dissecting the years into one year. It was just about strawberry jam, and then I had eaten so much of it that the next year I couldn't stand it. I couldn't even fathom why I would ever have liked it. And then it was all about cherry, and then it was all about blackberry. To then be back to strawberry, so fun. I love jam. Anyway, an hour full of jamming here in An Organic Conversation.
But first, here's the green headlines with Jen Lloyd.
Thank you, Mark. U.S. Fish and Wildlife receives largest donation in history. Billionaire and hedge fund founder Louis Bacon has donated 170,000 acres of wilderness in the Sangre de Cristo Mountains of southern Colorado to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, making the largest easement to the organization in its history. An avid conservationist and environmental philanthropist, Bacon recently donated most of his 81,400-acre Trinchera Ranch, adding to a previous donation of 90,000 acres from his neighboring ranch. U.S. Department of the Interior Secretary Ken Salazar stated, "Following in the footsteps of our greatest conservationists, Louis Bacon's generosity and passion for the great outdoors is helping us to establish an extraordinary conservation area in one of our nation's most beautiful places." Protesters block Shell headquarters with ice pyramid. Environmental activists from the Climate Justice Collective built a giant ice pyramid blocking the entrance to the Shell Oil headquarters in London last month in protest over Arctic oil drilling. 15 activists joined together in hopes to stop Shell's plans to drill in the Arctic Sea by creating the ice blockade, which began to melt almost instantly, a symbolic representation of the melting Arctic ice caps. One activist was quoted saying, "This is an unprecedented disaster we are trying to minimize." White House bees deliver 175 pounds of honey. The White House beehive, started by First Lady Michelle Obama in 2009, harvested 175 pounds of honey this year. White House bees number nearly 70,000, a project alongside the First Lady's 1,100-square-foot vegetable garden on the South Lawn. Experts say the dominant pollen source for the presidential honey is clover, along with other sources. Most of the honey is used in the White House kitchen for meals, as gifts given from the Obamas, and as an ingredient in the official White House honey ale. And Europe limits crop-based biofuel. The European Commission signaled a noteworthy change in its environmental policy when it announced plans to limit crop-based biofuels to 5% of transportation fuel. The policy change is in response to a campaign stating that land should be used for food, not fuel. And spokesperson for the commission is quoted as saying, the commission's message for post-2020 is that our clear preference is biofuels produced from non-food feedstocks, like waste or agricultural residues, such as straw. Production rates for biofuels made from grains, sugar, and vegetable oils will not increase, and rather stay at the rate they are right now. And those are the green headlines. Back to you, Helga.
Thank you, Jen. That's Jen Lloyd with a weekly update of what's going on in the world of green living and sustainability. Yes, no virgin crops being produced or pressed into biofuels. That's a great decision, not more than 5%. I was always concerned, the entire idea, which brings back the argument of, you know, quantity, quantity, quantity. If you have crops just grown for biofuel production, it seems more sustainable, but actually it is not, because you're using land that could otherwise be in food production.
And also, along with that, like a lot of the corn that's being used for ethanol and things like that are very heavy nitrogen feeders, and they take a lot of
potentially genetically engineered,
and take a lot of pesticides in the use of their growing. So yeah, I agree. I think it's a really smart move.
So when we talk about fuels, it needs to be recycled as much as we can. Recycle fuels. We had this great show about the Kamut grower.
Oh yeah, Bob Quinn.
Bob Quinn, yeah. Who uses 5% of his farm for creating oil that he then sells to restaurants first, and then gets it back from the restaurants, and then uses it in his machinery. That's just
which
brilliant.
He uses to cultivate his crops.
Yeah, and I think that makes a lot of sense. When they first started talking about, you know, transportation that would run on oil, I thought this is great, because then we can use the oil from restaurants that would have been tossed otherwise. So that makes perfect sense to me. But to produce it for that purpose, yeah. It seems it doesn't seem very sustainable.
Yes, but on a happy note, honey from the White House.
Love them bees.
Go Michelle Obama. We should have a little honey tasting. And it's really
my
good honey.
Goodness.
You've had it, right? When you got that annual gift from the White House?
Well, yeah.
The Obama's Christmas present.
You know, and it didn't make it to my house last year, but I did. Let's do a honey tasting. I was just at the farmer's market the other day, and I tried apple blossom honey and lavender honey.
Oh.
And I tell you what, you will not be able to keep it out of your mouth.
Yes.
Unbelievable.
I have to say, when I was traveling in Europe, I was staying at this place in Italy that had 12 different types of honey to try, and I thought, at that time,
really,
many years ago, honey is honey, but then acacia honey, orange blossom honey. Oh, I mean, they all have such a different flavor profile. It's almost like how you get differences in wine.
Yes.
Very exciting.
Wonderful. Yes, and great leadership. Thank you to the White House, the Obamas, Michelle Obama, for her leadership in organic agriculture and spreading the message about healthy food. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helga Helberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
Coming up is our conversation with one of the finest jam makers in the country, Lena McCarthy, an author and expert on everything jamming, as we are tackling the world of fruit in a jar in today's show, Jam, Putting Summer on Your Toast, only here on An Organic Conversation. That and more when we come back. Stay tuned. And we are back here to An Organic Conversation, The Sweetest Thing. I'm Helga Helberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
Our topic today is jamming, the perfect toast, warm, crunchy, but not too dry, with a loving spoonful of strawberry jam and a good cup of English breakfast tea. Heaven. I'm a total sucker for toast and jam, the sweet, the warm, the mouthfeel, and oh, the flavor. Strawberry, blackberry, cherry, apricot, fruit in a jar is a world of love and attention and tradition and, yes, flavor. And it doesn't have to be a guilty pleasure either. As we will learn today, jams can be made without or with very little sugar or with sugar substitutes. Put the summer on your toast. In this hour, with our very special guest, author and jam expert, Lena McCarthy, who's joining us today from Brooklyn, New York. Lena, are you with us?
I am with you. Thank you, guys. It's so nice to be on your show.
You are with us. Oh, we just started. You just wait. No, Lena, we love your book. You just came out with a new book, Jam On. It's gorgeous. It's sincere. It has beautiful, beautiful text and photography, and it's all about jamming. How did your passion for jam begin? What inspired you to make this a career now and to write this book?
Thank you so much for those kind words. Yes. And, you know, I learned to make jam from my mother, very traditional. Not my grandmother, my mother. And I grew up in rural upstate New York, so about a few hours outside New York City. And it was an area very rich in farmland, kind of traditional small farms. And my mother always made jam with local fruit. And she always would kind of play with different herbs and spices, things that were growing in our garden. Mm. And it was always really inspiring, and I always would help her and make it with her. And then once I left home and was on my own, I, you know, started learning how to make it myself. But, you know, of course, at first was always a little disastrous. And then I, slowly but surely, I kind of developed my own techniques. And I, you know, studied with old farm ladies. I would just harass them and ask them to, you know, show me their secrets. And could I just make jam with them in their kitchen? And, you know, many of them were super kind and let me jam with them. And then I would, you know, meet other chefs and pastry chefs especially who really, I think, work a lot with flavor in a really particular way, especially like very kind of exquisite small flavors. Mm. And so I had them show me what they did. Fun. And so slowly but surely, I kind of learned all of these different techniques. And then through that, I developed kind of my own. And certainly traveling was really inspiring for me. When I was in my 20s, I traveled a lot around the world and kind of learned a lot about flavor and spices and different herbs at group places and how people kind of would use them traditionally in their own places.
Wonderful.
And I feel like I've taken that a lot and put that into both my jam business and certainly in the cookbook as well.
Oh, that's great. So I have to ask you, is being a jam lover but not a jam maker, what is the difference between jam, jelly, preserves, marmalade, conserves? It's like I go on the aisle if I run out of what someone has given me and it's like, sure. Okay, what's the difference?
In Germany, it's called marmalade, but I'm actually not sure if there's a technical difference in how to make it. What can you explain all those terms, or are we talking about the same thing?
Yeah, and you know, I mean, it's the honest truth is that those terms are often interchangeable, especially in different languages. So, you know, sometimes you have marmalada, you have, you know, conserves kind of mean things a little bit differently in different languages. But traditionally speaking, what they are, is jam is smushed up fruit. So the pulp of the fruit, sometimes the seeds, all that stuff, just smushed up fruit.
So smushed up fruit.
Strained.
So smushed up fruit didn't go well on the label, right?
Too many characters.
Yeah, they thought, go get a jar of smushed up fruit, dear.
Let's just call it jam something.
So, Lena, were you saying that jelly is strained?
Yeah, jelly is just the juice. So it's really all of those, you know, often you can do it in different ways, different techniques, but really it's usually cooking that fruit, and then you strain the juice out of it. So it's usually clear or somewhat opaque and has that beautiful kind of classic idea, right, of a jelly. It kind of glows. It's really just this kind of clear, beautiful, colored often with whatever the fruit is. Preserves are whole fruits preserved in their juices. So often, you know, classic preserves are like a small little wild blueberry or those wonderful little like Mare de Glace strawberries. All those are perfect examples of preserves. So they're in their juice, but they haven't been smushed up. No smashing. And then marmalade is citrus-based. So always a little bit of that zest in there as well. So, you know, marmalade is traditionally that bitterness from the citrus. You know, certainly you can do, people, especially I'm sure you guys have seen this in California, where people get really adventurous and experimental, and things will have, you know, they'll have jalapeno strawberry marmalade, right, which also has, like,
yes.
You know, usually there's some citrus in there that makes it a marmalade, a little bitterness. And then conserves, although that word is used interchangeably for things, I think people like how it sounds, but really what it is traditionally is the addition of nuts or dried fruits.
Oh.
Interesting.
Wonderful. Wow, a whole new world. I'm taking furious notes here because you explain it in such a simple way. You know, I think for most people, they're like, well, they're probably so close that it's hard to differentiate. And actually, when you say it, it makes perfect sense.
Different
why
products.
There's a different word it's for right. each of them. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So what is the process of making jam, though? I mean, I'm sure each one of these has a different process because they're all a little bit different. But what's the basic?
You know, it's a really good question, and you're totally right. Obviously, like, each one of the explanations I just gave clearly show that the process is obviously slightly different, obviously for smashing fruit or straining fruit. But really, ultimately, jam making, and I'm going to say the way that I approach it especially, I think my cookbook is really meant for home cooks. So it's for people who are making jam at home and making it for their families and their friends and having fun. And really, the process is very simple. You take fresh, delicious fruit. And that's the one thing that I would say is my particular stint on jam making is that you really want to use good fruit. You don't want it rotten. You don't want it because it's really going to taste rotten if you make jam out of rotten fruit.
Well, you're concentrating the flavor, right? So it's all that more important that you're getting something that's so fresh.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So you're really concentrating the flavor of something. So thinking about what you start with, your basic fruits and herbs or spices, whatever that you're making, really thinking about those being something that you love and something that you want to taste, because the flavor is going to be the condensed version of that. So, you know, starting with some great local fruit is ideal. And really you want fruit that's been picked that day. You know, you want it fresh. You want it maybe picked recently, at least. If it's pears, maybe it'll be okay if it's a little older. But really ideally you want that beautiful, fresh fruit that you're going to then take. And the whole idea of preservation, right, is that you preserve that taste. You know, you preserve that amazing flavor of fresh fruit, and you try to kind of make that last.
And Lena, in your book, you're actually describing the process of sourcing, how important it is to buy from local producers, to go for organic, in season, local, as fresh as possible produce. So without that, it's hard to make a good jam, right? It's the foundation of everything.
Exactly. You know, you got to start with that good foundation, right? And as in most things, you want to start with that strong, good foundation. And with jam, you know, it's fruit. That's really what it is. You're making condensed fruit. So starting with some great, you know, really wonderful, fresh, yes, hopefully organic fruit that just, you know, you can taste the difference.
Yes.
You guys, obviously, everyone knows, right? That taste of, like, delicious fruit from some small farm where it was grown with love.
Oh, yeah, we do. And we want you to walk us through the steps following. We'll take a very, very quick break. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
And we're speaking with Lena McCarthy, the founder and CEO of Anarchy in a Jar, and also the author of an amazing new book, Jam On, The Craft of Canning Fruit. In this hour of An Organic Conversation, as we are exploring the world of jams, putting summer on your toast, putting toast on your summer. We'll be right back
in the fall.
More. Stay tuned.
Earl's Organic Produce is the only 100% organic wholesaler in the San Francisco produce market. We are proud to offer a unique limited edition organic heirloom salsa made with the most flavorful heirloom tomatoes and offered only during the prime time of the heirloom season. Our tomatoes are sourced exclusively from Tutti Frutti Farms in Lompoc, California. Look for it now at local retailers in the San Francisco Bay Area. Follow us on Facebook, Earl's Organic.
Frye Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Frye never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Frye organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Frye Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at fryewine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Do you have a passion for healing through healthful organic food? Become an expert in nutrition, the prevention of illness, and the promotion of optimal health. The Bowman College Distance Learning Program is a convenient, self-paced program that prepares you for a successful career as a nutrition consultant in your own home, on your own time, in a way that's organic to you. Start on your path to holistic health today with the Bowman College Distance Learning Program. Find out more at bowmancollege.org. That's BAUMANcollege.org.
The Farmer Veteran Coalition is a nonprofit organization dedicated to provide veterans with resources, education, and technical assistance to prepare them to become successful farmers. After serving their country, many veterans are interested in working with the land but do not have a background in farming or ranching. Help the Farmer Veteran Coalition to assist veterans in starting a new career in sustainable agriculture. For more information, please visit farmvetco.org. That's farmvetco.org.
And we are back here to an organic conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
Our topic today here in this hour is jamming the perfect toast with a loving spoonful of strawberry jam. What else is there in life? We have Lena McCarthy with us today, the founder of Anarchy in the Jar and the author of an amazing book, Jam On, The Craft of Canning Fruit. And her website is anarchyinajar.com. To guide us through the world of jam making in this hour here in an organic conversation. We talked about the importance before the break of, you know, key ingredients of fruit, of the basis of jam making, which so often in life is the foundation, really makes or breaks the product. The foundation is what defines the outcome, starting with local, perfectly ripe, in season, fresh, ideally organic fruit is really important. And Sita, you had a great thought during the break.
Yeah, absolutely. If you are getting into jamming, or if you're inspired because your favorite fruit is in season, I really recommend buying, if you're going to jam, buy a flat of that at a wholesale price from a wholesale distributor. I think that, you know, you're going to get really peak quality that way, and you're going to save yourself sometimes up to 50% what you would pay at the market.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're fortunate here in Northern California to have Earls Organic, which does organic wholesale distribution. But if you don't live in Northern California, something that I have done in other locations is when you go to the farmer's market, let the farmer know that you're interested in buying a large quantity because you're planning on jamming. And then they'll usually give you a great discount if you buy a flat of it. So it's a really great way to make this a really economical choice.
Well, you could also ask for number two fruit, which is the same cosmetically nice, but it's usually just as good a flavor and picked fresh that you know that day too.
That's like funny shapes, whatever, perfectly fine. There's nothing wrong with it. It's certified organic at the peak of its flavor, and yet it doesn't meet the strict market requirements. You get big discounts for that as well if you need large quantities. Lena, you were just starting. It starts with the perfect fruit, of course. And then walk us through the steps. What's next? How do you,
yeah. So,
from
you know,
there to the jar?
I got a little passionate, I think, Ms. Jacket on step number one about how important sourcing fruit is. But yes, it is important. But then afterwards, your steps and what you guys were saying is totally correct. But I think I've found it's true all over the country at farmers markets. If you just ask farmers, they often have seconds, especially things like stone fruits, like, you know, peaches and plums and apples, all those kind of things. Often are things you can really get for an amazing discounted price if you just ask them for it. And then I think, you know, step number two is basically you source your fruit. And then, you know, I always suggest to people take a minute to kind of plan your recipe a little bit. Think about what you're going to do and what your plan is. And then, you know, cooking is the next step. And I am a big proponent of not cooking fruit for very long. That's my thing. That's my style. And I base it both on kind of an idea of fresh flavor, I'm also kind of modeling it a little bit on the some of the French techniques where you macerate fruit overnight. You bring out its juices. You kind of bring out the flavor of them, and then you just cook it for a little while.
How long would that be?
As quickly as possible.
What is long in this regard? What is short?
You know, it really depends on the fruit, on the jam that you're making. It really depends on how long you're cooking. But I, you know, my rule of thumb is, like, try not to be standing over that stove for more than half an hour. And so many, majority of recipes in my book are all quick. And quick does not mean that you're skipping crucial parts. It means you're trying to really cook things as fast and efficiently as possible so that you really retain that delicious, fresh flavor and the vitamins and minerals and all that stuff that's in the fruit. You want to kind of maintain that through not cooking it too much.
Sure.
And the two ways that you do that, at least in my kind of recipes, is either doing it through a long maceration process, so letting the fruit sit overnight. You just kind of put together a little lemon juice, a little sugar, let it sit overnight, and then depending on the recipe, often the next day when you cook it, you really just cook it for a short amount of time. Sometimes if it's very juicy, you're just going to cook that juice down really quickly, add the fruit, and then bring it to kind of the right temperature, which is 221 degrees Fahrenheit. That's the magic number.
That's what I was thinking.
And it becomes delved in jam world. And then that's kind of one technique. And then the second technique is using kind of an all-natural pectin. So using a little friend to help you learn how to make jam. And I think, Pomona's pectin is the one that I always suggest people use. It's a really great thing to use, especially if you're starting to learn how to make jam and you want kind of a foolproof recipe.
And what does that do? That's the thickener in the product, right?
What does pectin do?
So pectin is a naturally occurring part of every plant and fruit. Pectin is in the cell walls of most plants and fruits, and it is in higher concentrations in some than others. So citrus, apples, those are two things in which they both have a lot of pectin, especially things like lemons. Lemons are just chock full of pectin, and it's in their seeds and also in their skins. So one of the ways in which you can make your own pectins, and there's recipes for that in the book. I won't dwell on it too long. But you can also use something like Pomona's pectin. Pomona's pectin is simply citrus. It's 100% natural, and it's citrus that's been just kind of ground down to a powder. And again, not to get into too much of the science of it, but basically it's activated through calcium and not through sugar. So what that means is that you're basically able to make your jam gel without adding sugar and without having to cook it for a super long amount of time.
So that's the role of pectin.
Really nice things for people.
So that's the role of pectin.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, with some commercial pectin that you'll find, like, in your grocery store, one of the brands is called, like, Sure Gel. You know, that's your common pectin. And those ones, you can certainly use them, but the problem with those is you have to add twice as much sugar as fruit.
It's
a lot of sugar. You can think about how much sugar that is. It's a little scary. But you have to use twice as much sugar as fruit in order to make your product gel. So it's one of those things where I just don't recommend people use it because it's not all natural, and it just, it means that you're going to be really sugar bombing your jam. It's not going to taste quite as good at all. You know, you're really going to taste sugar, and then fruit is your second flavor.
You're listening. Hold on 1 second, Lena. Just want to reset. You're listening to an organic conversation in this fascinating hour on jamming. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
And we are in conversation with Lena McCarthy, the author of Jam On and a jamming expert, one of the most regarded here in this country, also the founder of Anarchy in a Jar, guiding us through the world from perfect produce and fruit to the cooking. And we want to hear how it makes it into the jar. But first, Lena, we have a produce update, what's in season in this week. Every week we look at what the market is boosting and what is just perfect. And Mark, have you ever made pomegranate jam? Here's our very own Mark Mulcahy with what's in season. What's in season, Mark?
Well, I already said that I haven't made jam, but But now, since we're talking about pomegranates, why don't we just talk about pomegranates
today? Let's talk
today.
About pomegranates.
Well, first of all, something that you might want to know is when you're if you're driving around and you live in a state that actually has pomegranates growing, this is the time where you start noticing that the leaves start falling away from the trees and there's these beautiful red globes hanging from the trees. It always this reminds me that fall is here and winter's on the way and I get even happier by the day. And the name pomegranate in Latin means seeded apples, which is something that Helga knew, but I did not know, even though I'm the produce expert. And so you go to the store, you go to the farmer's market, and you're looking for some pomegranates, and you're really going, I really want to pick out a really nice one. Well, what you want to do is, like many produce items, you want to make sure they're heavy for their size because they'll be the juiciest. And then don't worry so much about the color. Everybody wants to pick out that perfectly red pomegranate, but the color of a pomegranate really varies from red to reddish brown without affecting the quality. What you do want to look for is a very deep color, whether it's red or reddish brown. When you get them home, they should be stored refrigerated because they'll actually start breaking down quicker if you don't, and they can last in your refrigerator for 3 to 4 weeks, so they can last for a while. And when you want to use them, now I always used to just sit on my porch and just open them up and then eat seeds and then spit them after I got all the juice out of them. That's what I taught my daughters to do. We'd put on big T-shirts that could get stained. But there's other ways that you can get the seeds out. haven't you tried something, Helga?
Yes, Sita actually had a great tip a few months back. I don't know what the recipe was, but to have a bowl with water and submerge the pomegranate when you cut it open in the water and then try to work out the seeds somehow. I've done it. I don't remember if I used a tool, a spoon or something to get them out, but there's no spritzer on your clothes, of course, and they all float, and it's easy to harvest that way, and it's completely clean. It's fascinating.
Yeah. Actually, you want to use your hands, because if you use a knife or a fork, you could really damage the juice that's around each of them. But what happens
is... you just pry them out with your thumb, right?
Yeah, exactly. Just use your fingers to mesh it up. And I don't know if I'm using the right words, but the arils...
Yes.
Mark.
Yes.
That is the...
Errol Flynn's, yes.
Errol Flynn's, yeah, that's the full
the
name.
The little Errol Flynn's.
It's those that will... float to the, are the arils the
actually the seeds will float to the go to the
bottom
and the
pith
heavier.
Oh, it's the
pith,
that's
will go to the top.
So the arils are the seeds and they're heavier, so they sit at the bottom of your bowl of water, and then the pith floats to the top because it's lighter in density, and then you can just take all of that pith off, and what you're left with are the arils, the fruit of the pomegranate sitting at the bottom of your bowl, and you don't have red juice all over your shirt.
And you're not pithed off.
And it's really pithed off.
Oh, Lord.
And it's really easy to do. Actually, those came out right away in 3 minutes. I had the entire pomegranate seeds out of there, and yeah, wonderful.
I wish I would have known that trick when I was working in restaurants. I was given several flats to make to make pomegranate sauce, and I was whacking the back of these pomegranates and getting red juice everywhere. And I was an intern at that time. It was my first restaurant job. Somebody was laughing at the intern whacking the pomegranates.
Yeah, give her these. That's right.
So it's still on YouTube, actually.
Yeah, it's still. So, once you've separated your seeds from your pith, if you just want to juice it, you're not going to take the seeds out. What you can do is, first of all, you want to leave it on the counter and get it warm, and then you roll it on a hard surface. You literally roll the pomegranate until, and then you'll start feeling it get soft, and that makes it easier for you to extract the juice. And then you puncture it at the end of the pomegranate and just insert a straw, and you can drink the juice inside. So it's like a little little pomegranate juice box.
Coconut juice thing.
Nice. Juice box.
Yeah, it's like a little pomegranate juice box. Or alternatively, you can squeeze out the pomegranate juice with like a lemon squeezer like you would an orange. And one of my favorite ways to eat pomegranates is, besides sitting on the porch and spitting the seeds, is... I take sliced Fuyu persimmons, which will be in season right now, which are really great. That's the firmer persimmon. And then dress it up a little bit with a little honey and a dash of orange liqueur. And then I scatter pomegranate seeds all over the top. And it is just lovely.
How do you store them, Mark?
When
you get them at home and you bought them at the store, do you keep them on the counter or in the fridge?
Well, as I put them in the refrigerator, and they'll last up to 3 weeks there. The seeds will last frozen for several weeks. So that's what's in season.
Thank
Wonderful
you, Mark.
For that weekly update of what's going on in the world of produce. pomegranate, it's where it's at. Thank you, Mark. Mark Mulcahy, produce expert. We are looking at jamming in this hour, preserving the best nature can give us, putting summer on your toast. And with us still is Lena McCarthy, founder and CEO of Anarchy in a Jar. That's anarchyinajar.com, with a wonderful book, a new book on the craft of canning fruit, Jam On.
So, Lena, you were just talking about sugar and jamming and how when done with the right process and the right ingredients, natural pectin being one of those, you can actually get away with using less sugar, which I think is so fascinating. And I want to know now, like, what is the next...
Sugar.
Or no sugar. Yeah, exactly. Or no sugar at all. What's the next step? Like, I know that for some people, like I said, the fear is sometimes of botulism. So how do you get that jammy goodness into a jar safely?
Well, you're so right. We've now gotten to the scary part. The part that people are really scared of, right? All canning, it's like, ta-da! We should have like dramatic music playing right
dun,
now,
dun,
right?
Dun.
But it's really the part that's like so scary for people is they're afraid they're going to kill their friends and their family. They're going to poison them with their product. And the truth is, I'll say this now, it is going to be very, very hard, unless you, like, add arsenic, to kill someone with your jam. Because the beautiful thing about fruit is that fruit naturally has a really low pH. And that means that things like botulism and really bad bacteria, they can't grow in that environment. Because basically the jam is just, it doesn't have the right, you know, it's too acidic. It has that the beautiful acid that we're used to, that little bite of acid that you have when you eat fruit. That's actually protecting you, and it's protecting the fruit, and it means that you're not going to get those bad, bad bacteria when you jar it, especially, you know, even more if you're adding things like a little lemon juice or even a little bit of sugar or honey, things like that. They're really going to fight off those bad bacteria. Those are all, like, really going to make a perfect environment in your jar. That said, everybody, especially if you're going to want to keep your jam and give it away as gifts to people or put it on your shelf, the goal, the next step is to put it in that jar and can it. So the next stage is you fill your jars. I always suggest to people that you use things like ball jars just because they're really easy. You can find them in your hardware store. They're cheap, and they have a really easy two-part lid. And the inner part just has a little rubber flange, and they have a little button in the center of the lid that pops up and down. And that button is such a wonderful, foolproof way to know whether you've sealed your jar or not. So it just makes you feel extra safe, and it makes a really satisfying sound as well when you've canned it.
So
we're talking, just like with canning or other preserves, you boil the glass while the jam is cooking, and then you put the hot jam in the sterilized, in the glass, out of the water with some tongs, and you put the lid on it, and when everything cools down, it seals, vacuum seals itself, and that under pressure basically sucks in that little red dot, right? And you know it's done.
That's right. It's the magic of science that happens, which is you basically put it in your pot of boiling water. And the thing I always tell people, just like it's such a tiny tidbit, but make sure that your jars are covered.
Yes.
Make sure that there's water totally covering the jar and that they're totally submerged in water. You know, they don't have to be in a fancy rack. You don't need any tools. You can just put them in a regular pot. Just your jars. Make sure they have the lids, you know, tight. Just give them a little hand tight. Don't have to be, you know, wrench tight, and you just put them in the pot, and you bring it to a boil. And for most jars, especially at most normal elevations, you really only have to boil them for like 6 minutes, not that long. And you're going to listen to it, and you'll see when they're at a rolling boil because they start kind of clinking against each other and making this pretty little sound. And it's boiling, and there's steam coming out, and just let it go. It's totally fine if they're clinking and making noise. You let them be at that full rolling boil because you want it to be really nice and really hot in there. It's 212 degrees in there, and that's the perfect temperature to kill all those bad bacteria that might be in your jar, when it sneaks into your jar.
So those are the two temperatures, right? 221 for the jam and 212 for the glass? That's
just don't get it mixed up.
That's great to know.
And then what do you do
You're
after
really
that?
Good. Yeah.
What do you do after that? Once you've made your jam, do you have to store it in the refrigerator or can you store it on the shelf?
That's the beauty of preservation, is that once you pull it out of that pot, let it sit and chill out for a few minutes, and you'll hear that magical little pop happen. It's actually pretty loud if it's in your kitchen. You'll hear these very, you know, very loud little pops, and then you'll touch that lid, and you'll feel that the whole thing is just sucked down. The lid won't move at all. It's totally sucked down. And that means that what's happened is the air has all been pushed right out of that jar, and you've got a totally safe, sterile environment inside that jar. So what's amazing is you can actually leave that jar on your shelf for a year, sometimes much longer. I mean, I'm sure if you found that jar 4 years later, you know, it wouldn't taste as good. Obviously, as it goes, as it ages, it's not going to taste as good. But you can totally leave it on your shelf, unrefrigerated, sealed like that in the jar for at least a year.
Wow.
And that's Lena McCarthy today with us, calling in from Brooklyn, New York, with her new book, Jam On. Lena is a jam lover and jam expert in this hour as we are exploring the world of preserving the summer's bounty and putting summer on your toast. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Palomar.
Lena, stay with us. We want to talk with you about recipes. How do you envision new recipes? What can you pair well? You talked about spices and herbs, etc. When we come back, we'll take a quick break, but we'll be back with more. Stay tuned. Dreams away for now. I won't see you for some time. I am lost in my mind. I get lost in my mind. Mama once told me, you're already home when you feel love. I am lost in my mind. I get lost in my mind.
Fry Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Fry never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Fry organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Fry Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Are you a chef, have a catering business, or planning a party, or simply just love organic produce? If you're in the San Francisco Bay Area, walk right in to Earl's Organic Produce. Anyone can buy directly from us at wholesale prices. You don't have to be a natural food store to enjoy the freshest and most delicious organic produce. We are located on the San Francisco Produce Market at 2101 Gerald Avenue. We look forward to seeing you.
Walk-in hours are Monday through Friday throughout the night from 10 p.m. to 10 a.m. Minimum purchase is one box or flat, cash or checks only. For more information, visit earlsorganic.com.
Are you interested in making healthy food your profession? Bowman College is a leader in the field of holistic nutrition and culinary arts. Their professional training programs prepare individuals for successful careers as nutrition consultants and natural chefs. Study at one of four locations in California and Colorado, or learn from home in a self-paced mentor distance learning program. Find out more about their classes on holistic nutrition and culinary arts at BowmanCollege.org. That's B-A-U-M-A-N College.org.
Do you feel run down, stressed, overweight, or overloaded? Urban Remedy is a delicious 100% organic juice cleansing program designed to jumpstart your body's natural healing and cleansing abilities. This delicious juice feast, created by leading acupuncturist Nika Pasquale, is rich in vital nutrients, minerals, and enzymes, providing you with all the nutritional nourishment you need to thrive. Delivered directly to your doorstep. Urban Remedy, a convenient way to boost your energy and balance your body. Place your order today at urbanremedy.com. That's urbanremedy.com.
The Farmer Veteran Coalition is a nonprofit organization dedicated to provide veterans with resources, education, and technical assistance to prepare them to become successful farmers. After serving their country, many veterans are interested in working with the land but do not have a background in farming or ranching. Help the Farmer Veteran Coalition to assist veterans in starting a new career in sustainable agriculture. For more information, please visit farmvetco.org. That's farmvetco.org.
And we are back here to an organic conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Palomar.
Strawberry, blackberry, cherry, apricot. Yes, fruit in a jar is our topic of this hour here on An Organic Conversation with an expert in that field, Lena McCarthy, the founder and CEO of Anarchy in a Jar. That's anarchyinajar.com. And the author of Jam On, her new book, The Craft of Canning Fruit. Before we hear her insider tips on recipes and what to pair well, including Asian pears, Mark, which I know are one of your favorites. He is our very own Chef Sita Rani Palomar, with the beauty and health tip of the week, her holistic bite.
Thank you, Helga. Well, this time of year, when the season is ripe with any particularly delicious fruit, I'm always reminded of how much better the item is when it's in its peak season and how I want to figure out a way to preserve that almost incapturable experience. And jamming is such a great way to do that. And my friends who jam have told me really funny stories about how their entire refrigerator got filled up with blackberry jam. They no longer had shelves to put their tortillas or vegetables or anything else. All they had in their refrigerator was jam and they didn't know what to do with it. So I thought it might be a good opportunity to say, don't let quantity deter you, because you can always think of a way to put food away. So some of my favorite tips that I've collected from chefs and foodie friends over the years about how to enjoy your jams, jellies, and preserves include the following. You can whisk your jam into salad dressings, for example. Think about raspberry jam with balsamic vinegar. Or use it as a glaze or a marinade. Maybe you take an apricot jam and use it in a barbecue sauce. You can also use those to make dipping sauces for spring rolls, for example. If you combine an orange marmalade with some soy sauce and sesame oil, really delicious with jam, with spring rolls and fresh vegetable rolls. Also, warm up your jam and serve it over ice cream or stir it into your oatmeal. You can also use it as a fruit filling in layers of cake, or put it over shortcake and top it with some coconut whipped cream. I also like to use it for thumbprint cookies and sandwich cookies, which I think make really, really great gifts. And you can put it in your waffles and pancakes too, so it's great at breakfast time, but also think about putting it in the batter for those things. You can mix it into your waffle pancake batter, you can mix it into your muffin batter, and it's also really fantastic as pie fillings and tart fillings. What a quick way to make a really delicious dessert for company. And then another thing that people don't really think about, but this is such a great tip that I got from our dear friend and sometimes guest Casey Coletti, who takes a honey-sweetened citrus marmalade that she makes with ginger, and then when she gets a cold or flu, she'll stir that into hot water to make herself a tea that helps to combat that uncomfortable flu season and also give you a dose of the ginger and the citrus that give you the flu and cold fighting support that you need. So, and then of course, giving them away as gifts, as Mark was saying at the beginning, there's nothing like getting a gift of homemade jam. So those are some of my favorite ways to use jam. You can find those tips on our website or on Facebook, facebook.com/anorganicconversation or anorganicconversation.com.
Thank you, Sita, for this week's holistic bite. And thank you to Echo Bella for bringing us this weekly update on the world of healthy eating, responsible fashion, and intelligent beauty. And speaking of and with an intelligent beauty, Sita, what's your Echo Bella tip of the week?
You know, I just like fall. With jam, I like something that's versatile. And I think bronzer is incredibly versatile. It's a great way to kind of keep that tan that you've had, but then also use it as an eyeshadow, or mix it with a lip balm and use it as a lip color. So you can get 3-in-1 out of one product.
And it's fall. This is the time of bronze color.
I was just thinking that myself when we were talking, that I don't have any bronzer.
Mark, you should come visit my cosmetic closet.
Well, the Holistic Bite, as always, brought to you by Echo Bella. Wonderful, clean products, always gluten-free, cruelty-free, and preservative-free. Learn more about Echo Bella and tell us what you think. That's EccoBella.com. That's EccoBella.com. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helga Helberg.
I'm Mark Bulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
And we are putting summer on the toast in this hour with Lena McCarthy, who's joining us from Brooklyn, New York, who is a jam expert, and her new book, The Craft of Canning Fruit, Jam On. And Lena, we talked about the basic step, the bird's eye view of selecting perfect fruit, perfectly ripe in season, keeping your equipment sterile by cooking it, filling the cooked jam after it's mashed and a little bit acid and sugar added into the jar. It will be sealed for years to come. Not too much to worry about any contamination, or if you follow the basic steps as described in your book. But Mark, you had a question about recipes, and I know your favorite.
Well, Lena, what I was wondering is, so where does that, when you're envisioning a jam, right? What's the creative process? And Helga already brought up Asian pears. So if I were to give you some amazing Asian pears, which they are right now, you know, walk us through the process of envisioning an Asian pear jam. What would you use and why to make the flavors?
And you mentioned herbs and spices in the beginning of the show, and your book is full of creative ideas of that you wouldn't necessarily combine with jam. How do you go about it?
Well, you know, you guys have gotten to the fun part. This is the fun part of jam making. It's the best part is dreaming up your jam flavors. It's where you get to just think, what's the craziest, funnest thing I can think of? And, you know, where does that process start? Well, I mean, it starts in your imagination, but it also starts in reality. That's the beautiful thing about canning is that, you know, you're at the farmer's market and you'll see an Asian pear. You'll see these beautiful, beautiful Asian pears or whatever fruit it is that you're in season that you see there. And you know, that's the starting point, right? I always say that's your ground zero. That's your starting point. That's where you're going to start from. And then after that, think about the fun flavors that you can play with. Think about what flavors you want to make in your jam. And things like pears, you know, pears are a really fun flavor to play with because initially, you know, pear is a great flavor on its own. You could certainly just make an Asian pear jam and it would be delicious. But then it's fun to kind of make it your own. And I actually do that at the end of my every chapter in the book, in my cookbook, how to make it your own section. And it's really the goal of it is just to get people inspired. And I give people kind of different combinations they can do with the basic recipe. So instead of, you know, kefir lime, why don't you play with lemon verbena, for instance. So, you know, pears are a really fun flavor. And I think especially you can get a little wild with pears. They take spices really well. They take flavors really well. I think a really fun thing to do with pears is teas, actually. One of the fun things to do is infuse your jam with a little bit of tea. And that's something super easy. You may have this really tea that you just love at home that you want to play with and you want to kind of add to it. And that's a great thing. You can actually just do it just like you would make a pot of tea. So you take a tea bag or you loose tea and you can put it in your little tea strainer. You can actually infuse that in your jam as you're making it.
You should have seen us all. We all just perked up in the studio when you said that. I've never heard of that idea before. How smart!
So you're talking the tea water, not the tea, not the tea leaves, right? The tea water.
No, the tea itself. Like you literally take just like you're making a pot of tea. So you take like just like you're gonna you're like okay, you approach it just like you're making tea. So you'll take, you know, obviously the amount of tea leaves that you add depends on, of course, how many pears you have, right? So if you're making like a giant batch of jam, then you're going to, you know, be a little more wild with how much. If you're making a small pot, then you just, you know, you want to be careful because you don't want to make it too bitter.
Sure. You have to take the tea out afterwards, right? When you're done, you don't leave the tea leaves in the jam.
Exactly. Just like if you're making yourself a cup of tea. I mean, I would say literally approach it like you're making yourself tea at home just for you. Treat the jam that way. So, you know, take your little, say you're going to use a loose tea, which, again, I think Asian pears, you could get a little crazy. You can use, like, a really fun jasmine tea or even a hibiscus would be delicious. I would say something like, you know, I have one I love that has a lemongrass in it. That would be fun too. Even like a chai, because the thing about pears is they take intense spice flavor really well.
So
you could do like a really delicious chai in there as well.
That's great.
So creative. And I know that you said you got a lot of inspiration from traveling around the world where you saw kind of unique combinations in different cultures and helped inspire you to start your business. So we're just running out of time here. I want to make sure we get to Anarchy in a Jar. Tell us about your company and who are the Jam Queens and where do they reign? Because that sounds
really
like a pretty cool kingdom to me.
So we, you know, we reign in Brooklyn. That is our home. And Anarchy in a Jar, I started the company 3 years ago, and a little over 3 years ago. And it just, you know, I started it in a really ground up way, just like using, you know, local produce to make really delicious jams that I love. And I would do jam parties. When I started the company, before it was a real company, I would do jam tastings in my home and I would invite everybody over to these jamboree parties and everybody would taste my jams and I'd make them leave notes and tell me what they thought about the flavors I'd invented. And then slowly but surely, I just, you know, I made it into a business. I started selling at markets, just little small food markets, and it just kind of, people really got into it and it just became a brand, and you know, stores started buying it and picking it up, and so we started making more, and then you know, I started selling to bigger stores like Whole Foods, and then you know, it just kind of took off on its own and became a thing. And I really, you know, my big thing about the company is we all still make it by hand. So I have a wonderful staff and they all help me. You know, we make the jams by hand, and we still use, you know, our big thing is that we use local produce, and we, you know, have really wonderful relationships with farms all through New York and New Jersey and Connecticut and Long Island, and we bring in all that wonderful produce that's grown all around New York.
Yes, and you have a really wonderful website.
Exactly, the website.
Thank
I was just
you.
Pointing that out because the revolution starts in your mouth. Anarchyinajar.com. That's your website with tons of posts and comments and recipes and tips and upcoming events. Really well organized. Again, anarchyinajar.com. That's Lena McCarthy's website, who's the founder of Anarchy in a Jar and jam expert and the author of Jam On, her new book, also to be bought on her website. Lena, thank you so much for joining us. What a packed hour with you. And
thank you. You guys really inspired me. I want to eat.
We inspired
right
you?
Now.
Oh my God.
And I'm so jealous of all you guys in your West Coast with your delicious fruit.
Well, hopefully you'll come out here and
out
start.
In the West Coast area.
Oh, good. Well, hopefully you'll start retailing
yes.
here soon, too.
Stop by. We're definitely.
Yes.
Yes, we're definitely
well,
jelly over here.
A few different stores. So, a few different stores around the Bay Area, and I'll be out in the Bay Area. Around in early November too. So
well, bring some jam. We'd love to try it.
Hang out and ask me questions.
Yes,
yeah,
we
look
will.
Us up.
Thanks
really
for
fun.
Being part of it. Thanks so much, Lena. Take good
take care.
Good luck.
Best of luck
bye
with
bye.
Your book. Thank you, Lena.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thank
bye.
You. Wonderful. Talk about inspiration.
So, I know. So yummy.
See, if you start making jam, you'll be that excited too.
Yeah, you were impressed that I knew that you had to sterilize the glass. And actually, I've done it.
Helga, every day you impress me.
No, you're welcome.
Yes.
You're welcome.
Yes, thank you, Helga. And that was this week's edition of An Organic Conversation. Thanks for listening.
An Organic Conversation is a proud production of the Organic Media Network. Associate producer is Kristen Ponger, studio engineer Robert Costa, today Jen Lloyd. News services, Jen Lloyd, underwriting production provided by The Ear, the one and only Mark Van Gelder. Thank you all.
If you missed parts of this show or for any other episode, visit iTunes or anorganicconversation.com.
And as always, we love to hear from you with recipes or comments or questions.
Or jars of jam.
Or jars of jam. You can send all that to share@anorganicconversation.com. Again, that's share@anorganicconversation.com. We'll provide our P.O. box for any mailings of any goodies. And you can also follow us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/anorganicconversation. Please help spread the word. If you love this show as much as we do, we are your hosts, Helga Hellberg,
Mark Mulcahy,
and Sita Rani Palomar.
Yes, and we will be back right here, same place, same time next week. See you then.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Now. Bye-bye.
By the way that
I
feel, there's no being